Now it's time for very serious football talk with the man who met his wife on a blind date, chaperoned by his parents.
They actually came along on the first date with us. There was a...
No!
I rode in the back seat. I was 22.
The man who needs to take a minute to remember the names of all of his children.
Do all of your kids have the same first letter?
No, actually. Let me think. Do any of them? Tucker, Mason, Cole, Isabel, and Lucas.
The man who can defend you in court, but will probably choose not to.
I'll cop to this on a public setting right now. I am an aggressive cuddler in a consensual sense.
Comma, officer.
Good grief, he's a pastor too? When does this guy sleep?
You will find Seth Kaiser everywhere except for in his or your bed, because not only does he not sleep, he's also a faithful husband. So that's important.
It's Seth Kaiser of The Athletic on Almost Entirely Sports.
Talking to Seth Kaiser is always a joy. It brings warmth to the hearts of men, a la Santa Claus. And it's cold enough outside that I feel like I can reference Santa even before Thanksgiving. But the problem today, as we talk now to Seth Kaiser of The Athletic here on Almost Entirely Sports. Seth, I'm afraid that you've brought Cole, because first of all, it'll warm up the studio a little bit. And second of all, they lost to the Titans, Seth. They lost to the Titans. That wasn't supposed to happen.
There's something about the Titans. They are, I don't know if they're the new Colts or what, but I mean, if you look at the box score, you look at all these things, the number of crazy things that you don't see in most NFL games that had to all happen for the Chiefs to lose, all happened. And it's a bummer. Those are tough things. But also, the entire NFL was crazy on Sunday.
Yeah.
You know, in the meantime, the Saints were getting stomped.
Yes.
By the Falcons. The Bills got worked over by the Browns. Mm-hmm. I mean, multiple teams. The only team that didn't lose that was, you know, expected to win seems like is the Ravens. And that's because they're playing the Bengals, who are like the new Dolphins.
Yeah. Literally worse than the Dolphins. Here's the thing, and that's all, like, that is the perspective that I think is valid and necessary in the NFL that has this much psychotic stuff every week. The thing that's frustrating is that I wanted the Chiefs to be past this. And now, like, look, I think you responded to it, somebody tweeted, like, oh, well, Super Bowl teams don't lose these games. And the Patriots were 3-5 on the road last year. Like, that's blatantly false. But
right.
I wanted it to be false for the Chiefs, man. I don't want them to lose to the Titans when Patrick Mahomes is out there. We're supposed to be past that
right.
At this point.
Right. And I get that feeling. You know, fans are really frustrated right now. And I think that the reality is, had the Chiefs not dropped a game to the Colts a few weeks back,
mm-hmm.
that they should not have lost.
Mm-hmm.
There's no reason they should have lost that game. I think even just that one different result might have a fan base that's acting very different, right?
Yeah.
Because against the Texans, you know, Watson did some pretty good things, even though, again, that's a game they probably should have won,
mm-hmm.
but they just ultimately couldn't. You know, hey, Green Bay, you lose to Green Bay. You gave him a good game without Jones, without Mahomes, without Fisher, without all kinds of players. Okay. And then, okay, you're getting the whole band back together. Well, it happens. So you lose a weird game. But they just lost a weird game. And, yes, they had way more injuries against the Colts. Everyone was hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that. But I think fans were hoping, okay, Mahomes is back. Phil's healthy. Watkins is healthy. Well, I don't think Watkins is healthy, for one thing, but that's neither here nor there. Watkins is playing, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, maybe now the weirdness is over. That Colts game is the end of the weirdness. And with the Patriots losing last week, it felt like they still had a chance to try to figure out the one-seed situation. They had a lot of good going for them. And it felt like that first quarter, that this was like time to put the fear of God in the league game.
Yeah.
And they were right there, and then the rug just got pulled out from underneath them. And I think when you combine those things, the weird loss a few weeks ago, all the injuries that have been so frustrating, the weirdness that was that second quarter, the fact that it was the Titans, all that, And then you have the, hey, this looks like we're going to dominate. Oh, just kidding. I think that's where you have the amount of frustration that you and a lot of other people are feeling, including me.
I wanted to. You sounded very accusatory. Like, well, I'm super cool with how this has all gone. Like, they're 1-3 against the AFC South. That sucks. That sucks. Is that a good stat? Is that a rich stat? No. But does it suck? Absolutely it does.
Oh, yeah, and I am not calm. I mean, you and I have talked. I during times ours on Monday, I mean, I went ballistic.
Yes.
I don't remember why. Like, someone mentioned the Ravens playing the Bengals. I was like, why does everyone else get to play them? And I just freaked out. So I'm freaking out, too. Because it's frustrating. I mean, I've written two articles this week, and both of them are blasting the head coach and the assistant
head coach. Yeah, yeah, that's true.
And so I'm not thrilled. I'm just ready to, okay, that sucked. Let's see what happens Monday night. If they lose again, well, that will be my time to adjust my expectations game.
Yep. So you mentioned Times Ours, so I should note, if anyone's listening to this segment on a regular basis and hasn't heard about Times Ours yet, I mean, you're just not very attentive, I guess. But if you're new, maybe, you can check out Times Ours on The Athletic with me and Seth and Nate Taylor. The episodes on Monday are always free to everybody. So you want to go back and listen to the three of us talk about this game yesterday. You can do that for free and find out if that is enriching enough to your Athletic subscription to hop on board. But now, Seth's written two pieces for The Athletic already this week. I believe Nate's already written two this week. My column went up. We are putting out so much content out of this game. So that is a good indicator. First of all, how hard The Athletic is working right now. And second of all, how much this sucked. So let's go chronological here, because I think that if we don't start with the special teams, we're never going to get to it. That was the place
right.
That you started. I think Sunday night you were like immediately almost done with the story. Like I feel like this was a magic wand that just filled up a Google Doc for you, because the special teams unit was a disaster. It's been poor all year. But man, if the tires were barely still on the car up until this game, they completely came off against the Titans. So what went wrong, and how do they fix it?
It looks like the special teams unit is not as well coached as it's been in previous years. And I can't think of another way to say that. The Titans knew the snap count at the end of the game.
Yep.
That's become very publicly shared since the game ended, that they started timing it. There's a big Twitter thread on it that I retweeted a while back, yesterday, that just they said that after the game, hey, we realized they weren't changing up, you know, the timing of their snap count, and they have a tell. You know, Colquitt looks at the long snapper, looks at the kicker, then when he looks back, they're going to snap it.
Well,
and
sometimes,
sorry,
Seth, not to interrupt you, but sometimes he looks at the long snapper and then looks at Butker, and then the ball is magically there already.
Yes, yeah. Sometimes he doesn't.
I'm the
and
worst.
So that you'd think that would have confused their timing. It's like, well, he might just snap it. We don't know. Like, what's he gonna do? That's a good point, Josh. So that's bad though. The fact that they weren't doing something as basic as noticing tells and changing snap count, that's basic stuff.
Yep.
The fact that they weren't clear on when the ball would be snapped, the kick before that, that's basic stuff. The fact that even though the guy got a great jump, no one blocked him, that's basic stuff.
Yep.
The hold that was on Dorian O'Daniel, which feels like the 5 billionth penalty against special teams this year, that's basic stuff. Hardman, fair catching a ball inside the four. Now, here's the deal. There were 17 seconds left in the first half when Hardman did that. Here's the thing, though. If Hardman, let's say the ball bounces into the end zone, there's still 17 seconds left, maybe 16. The Chiefs had all three timeouts and Patrick Mahomes.
Yep.
That's enough time to get into field goal range,
absolutely.
And they cost themselves a possession there.
Yep.
Because when you get the ball in the four, getting the ball in the 20, that's like, you know what? 130-yard gain to Hill and 120-yard gain to Kelce, field goal, great. Or, you know, one game to the 50, and hey, you know what? Hail Mary. Let's see what happens. They cost themselves a possession there. And so that's what the first article is about. It's not just those disasters at the end. Everyone noticed that.
Mm-hmm.
But they are costing themselves they cost themselves a possession at the end of the first half, like a real possession, and they're costing themselves yards, the bad returns, fumbles last week. I mean, it just, it's been sloppy. And the thing that makes that crazy is that over the course of from 2013 to 2018, they were always one of the best special teams units in the league.
Yes.
Always. They were ninth 1 year. That was the worst they ever were. Every other year, they were first, second, or third in the league. Yep. Twice they were first.
Yep.
And it's concerning because it's as though, I don't know if other responsibilities have been divvied out with the new title or what, but they do not look as well coached as they've looked in previous years, and it's costing the Chiefs because they could always count on having the better special teams.
I mean, yeah, it is tangibly costing them points. And so we can probably have a similar conversation about the offense. One of the things that I honed in on for my column that went up today wasn't just the decision on third and two, but also all of the fourth and shorts, the three different fourth and two, fourth and three, fourth and two that the Chiefs had and then elected to kick on. Andy Reid is just going against math in those moments. And so that has frustrated me, but you dove in. We can come back to that if you find that interesting. But your second thing up on The Athletic right now, which really, I always say Seth's work is good, and, you know, I tell the truth there in that regard, like 85 to 90% of the time. You gotta keep people on their toes. But this is a really, really good piece because it's very consumable. Like, Seth just goes, all right, so here's what happened. And you watch what happened. You're like, all right, I get it. And then here's what happened here. Okay, I see that was bad. Right, so Andy Reid did the wrong thing. Okay, I get it. Eureka. Walk us through that here without the advantage of the video clips. What went wrong on third and two? Why in your mind was that the wrong call on third and two? And why was that the anomaly with how Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes have been working together?
Sure. And I just want to say before we even start, yes, the article's up on The Athletic. And I would say for everything I've written, I think this is probably one of the most important issues facing the Chiefs right now.
Yes, 100% agree. 100%.
So on third and two, everyone's been over this by now. Third and two, I think they're on the 24-yard line. Mm-hmm. There's a minute 30-ish left to go in the game. And they had just, and this becomes important, they had run the ball the previous two possessions, or the previous two downs, gained 7 yards total, or eight yards total,
eight.
And so it's third and two, right?
Yep.
They'd elect to call a screen to Blake Bell. Now, here's the thing. Anyone could say, oh, that was a terrible call. And the first thing people are going to say in response is, oh, you're just using the benefit of hindsight. If it had worked, you would have called Andy Reid a genius. No, I wouldn't have. Mm-hmm. And here's why. They called a similar screen with the game on the line against the Baltimore Ravens in week three.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot go to the same well for trickery two times in the same situation.
Yeah.
You can't do it.
Yeah.
It's not a good idea. And the Titans were ready for it. Now it was to a different player, right? This was to Blake Bell. But also, Blake Bell isn't as good a receiver as Darrell Williams, for starters.
Yep.
So they call the screen. The Titans are ready for it. They do a good job. Mahomes ends up having to slide, losing yards, making for a tougher field goal, by the way, and taking away any possibility of just going for it if he felt like it. Just awful play. Awful play. It goes badly. The reason it was the wrong decision, one, like I said, you've already called a play like that with the game on the line previously. You don't want to double dip with that kind of trickery. But the biggest thing, the most important thing, is that the nature of a screen play, it takes away options.
Yep.
By definition, with a screen, everyone else is just running distractions. They're not really running routes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're running routes, sure, but their goal is to eventually block. They're not looking for the ball, so they're not real options on a screen play, with some rare exceptions. And then here's the other problem: once if the screen is covered, your blockers are gone. Because what offensive linemen do on a screen is they pretend to block, and then they let defensive linemen through because the idea is I'm going to loft the ball over their head and we'll giggle off into the night while we run away.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Because that's the goal of a screen, what that means is if the screen isn't successful, the quarterback can't ad-lib. He can't find other options. He can't do anything because There's guys right in his face. And also, if he doesn't get rid of the ball immediately, it's going to be an illegal offensive lineman downfield, and you're going to draw a penalty. So all that's a long road to a short thought saying this. With the game on the line, Andy Reid removed any options for a win on the play except his play call. There was no, well, Mahomes can check to this, Mahomes can do this, whatever. There were not multiple options given to his star quarterback. He put the game entirely in his own hands, and that's something Andy Reid has done time and time again. I think Andy Reid's a great coach. Mm-hmm. I do. I think players play hard for him. You know, people can say, oh, no, they don't. Let me just tell you, I talk to players. They love him. They would run through a brick wall for him.
Yeah.
They play hard for him. But he's also a genius. There's a reason Mitch Schwartz was sticking up for him. But he trusts himself and his play call. And with Patrick Mahomes, it's a terrible, terrible mistake. There's one more reason why that play call was the wrong play call, but I've been talking for a while now. Does that sum up my article pretty well?
Give me the one other reason you think it was the wrong call.
Another reason I think it was the wrong call is if you watch the previous play, and now I say normally I'm like Mr. Analytics. I think the aggregate numbers are important.
Because this is true, I think that this may – because everyone listening knows that about you. Watching the clip and then hearing this come from you makes this matter more to me.
I appreciate that. I'm normally someone – people say, oh, momentum doesn't matter. It's not a real thing, blah, blah, blah. Well, if you talk to players, they say it does, at least in the moment. So here's my answer to that. Individual circumstances aren't always going to reflect evidence in the aggregate. What that means is if I have a sore throat and some other symptoms that is strep throat 80% of the time, that means 20% of the time it's not strep throat.
Right.
And the doctor misdiagnoses me. So that's what I mean. Whenever I say aggregate numbers can be meaningless in the individual, and that's my biggest problem with analytics, it gets treated like it's kind of the end-all, be-all, and it's not. It should be treated as a tool in the toolbox. And most analytics guys will tell you that. Mm-hmm. It's a tool in the toolbox, but you still got to look at the individual circumstance. You can't just say, well, 80% of the time, this is the right decision. It's a fact, so I have to do it.
Right.
You have to say, okay, this is the right decision 80% of the time. Is there any reason I should go against the grain? All that said, normally momentum, probably not too much of a real thing. Mm-hmm. However, at the very end of the game, with everything looking like it's over, and you just ran the ball for 5 yards in a play where your running back got hit after 1 yard and managed to power forward with the help of the center for another 4 yards. And after the play, the defensive lineman and the linebacker show absolutely no emotion whatsoever. And this is what happened the previous play. So the Chiefs, they gained 3 yards on first and 10. Then on second and 7, Williams runs up the middle, manages to gain 5 yards, just powers up the middle. After that play, the Titans defenders, every one of them looked beat, absolutely beat. There was no emotion. There was no anything, barely even like hands on the hips. It was almost like a collective shrug. They felt like the game was over.
Yep.
When you see that, in my opinion, and I think that's why Damian Williams was so upset after the game. Yes, his fumble, I think, upset him too. But I think Damian Williams saw that. He felt it when he was running. And I'm sure he said, Coach, they're done. We can push them back 2 more yards.
Yeah.
And even analytics will tell you that on 3rd and 2, running the ball is often the best option. And so, to me, Reid kind of tried to have the best of both worlds. He wanted to call pass play, but he wanted to call one that had a really high percentage of at least completing a pass to keep the clock running. And so he removed options for Patrick Mahomes' hands, and he didn't run the ball because let's say you run the ball and you get a yard or a yard and a half. Well, you still bled the clock. They were winning.
Yeah.
They could have easily just, okay, now we got 4th and 1. I bet you Anthony Sherman can get 1 yard.
This is one of the other things that shows up in my column. I know you haven't read it yet because you're a very busy lawyer man. But this is something that has been grinding my gears now for 2 days. They shouldn't have run the ball with the plan of running it once and then kicking the field goal. They should have run the ball knowing full well that they had 2 more attempts on the ground to get 2 yards. You have 2 carries to get 2 yards. And not up at the goal line where everyone's stacked there. Like, you can still spread it out and then run the ball.
Right.
You've got lots of options there. That's still,
yep.
I'm all about finding the thing that's mathematically smart. And I love the analytics because it's just more information to show how things tend to work. Everything goes in that favor. You can take the anecdotal, you can take the analytical, and in that spot, run it, and then you can run it again. Or at least, if you're going to leave
right.
the ball in Mahomes' hands, which is not usually something that I would ever rail against, leave it in his hands and actually put it in his hands instead of making him essentially Mitch Trubisky for the play they ran on 3rd-and-2.
Absolutely, and that's a great comparison there. That's a play call, and this is what I said in the article, and I hope people read it, take a look at it, because, again, I think this is one of the more important things that I've written about under Andy Reid's tenure.
Yep.
Andy Reid had to do that with Alex Smith. I don't mean that as disrespectful to Alex.
Mm-hmm.
I think Alex Smith is a good quarterback,
mm-hmm.
but he is not a creator like Patrick Mahomes.
Nope.
Donovan McNabb early in his career was a creator, but sometimes to his own detriment.
Yeah.
And so Reid has had quarterbacks who were good but flawed. You know, late career Mike Vick was good, but flawed. Nick yeah. Foles is okay, but flawed. Or he's had guys like, you know, Kevin Cobb, who really aren't that good.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's controlled everything. And that makes sense. But when you have Patrick Mahomes, and you've got a guy who not only will execute the play you give him, but will create if something goes wrong, you've got to give him options. And that's what makes it so frustrating. I went and looked back at all the other third downs that game, and Mahomes was absolutely brilliant
yep.
on third down. He was dissecting the coverages. He was running the play perfectly if it went as called. And if it didn't go as called, it didn't matter because he would just make things happen. Like doing a flipping jump pass to McCole Hardman.
Insane.
Or, you know, I mean, you know, or throwing for a first down to DeMarcus Robinson while he's being tackled.
Mm-hmm.
You have to put the ball in his hands if you're going to not run it. You've got to give him options. But, again, the anecdotal evidence, the analytics, all of it say, look, it's 3rd-and-2. We have the lead. Run the ball here. They have a couple of really great short yardage runs that they do, one of which is that quick fullback handoff to Sherman.
Mm-hmm.
Worst-case scenario with a guy like Sherman is he gains no yards and it's 4th-and-2 and you've got a decision to make.
Yes.
That's your worst-case scenario.
Yes.
I don't understand where they were thinking
longer.
There.
Yeah, I don't either. Because the three options that could have happened on that play were Blake Bell, Mahomes takes a sack and then loses 5 yards, which means if you're going to kick, you can't go for it there probably, and you're going to kick it from 5 yards farther away, or you
right.
throw it away and stop the clock and then do the whole thing over again. It just didn't make sense.
It was a case of Andy Reid, in my opinion, who, again, I think he's a great coach. The people are calling for Andy Reid's head, I think that's crazy.
Yeah.
I really do. If Andy Reid got fired, there are 20 or so teams in the NFL, maybe more, that should hire him.
How many coaches would you rather have?
Done with Mahomes.
Like,
yeah.
I mean, two?
Right.
Two?
There aren't that many teams that are definitively better coached right now.
No.
And I know people don't feel that way, but, you know, it was just 1 week ago that Steve Spagnuolo was a genius, so maybe we should relax for a minute.
Yeah.
And so I just think that despite that, though, that doesn't mean that he's flawless. And that flaw, yes, the fourth down stuff is driving me crazy. I agree. You're absolutely right. He's got to start paying attention to the math with regards to fourth down,
mm-hmm.
and especially fourth and short,
mm-hmm.
because the math dictates a certain action, especially when you've got a great offense and
yes.
an average at best defense.
It's the analytical and the analytical and the anecdotal working together again. That
absolutely.
So frustrating.
The specifics of their situation mean that you're more likely. That's the thing that I would always ask. Do you think the Chiefs' offense is more likely to gain 2 yards or the defense is likely to get a 3-and-out? Because that's almost always going to be the question.
Yep.
And usually the answer is going to be the Chiefs' offense can gain a few yards. And plus, we've talked about this in the past, if you view fourth down as a viable option, most of the time it changes your play call on third down.
Yes.
And that's helpful. It widens the playbook. So the biggest thing, Andy Reid, great coach. Guys play hard for him. He seems like an excellent person. He is a brilliant offensive mind. We're seeing right now with Sean McVay, it is hard to be a great offensive-minded coach in the league for 20 years.
Absolutely.
There's Andy Reid and Sean Payton and, I mean, Belichick.
Yep.
I mean, and Belichick isn't even, would you call him a great offensive coach? Because he sure hasn't, you know, without great talent, they're not usually great offensively. Now, he's a great defensive coach and a
sure.
good offensive coach, but he's not like an innovator as often as Reed, and Peyton.
Correct.
Like, that's the list.
Yeah.
Like, Sean McVay's offense is getting exposed. Guys like Andy Reid don't exist, but that doesn't mean he's perfect. And right here, he's got to start adjusting to having the MVP as his quarterback.
So here's I think you're right that the issue you've written and talked about here is one of the most important issues you can discuss regarding the Chiefs. The other thing that I think, for the sake of, like, just having all the cards on the table here, is that I won't, and I don't think you will, argue that the Chiefs could not win a Super Bowl in spite of those flaws continuing. Like, if you said, hey, the Chiefs will win a Super Bowl in the next 3 years, but Andy Reid never perfects the math on fourth down, he never completely lets go of Patrick Mahomes when he should, I would say that's a totally plausible thing that could still happen, because every NFL team is flawed. Overcoming flaws is what everyone except for the Patriots do, and the Patriots just seem to not have, you know, mistakes like that. But they do have structural flaws. The question that I would ask, and you know, correct me if I'm wrong on that first point, but secondarily,
no, you're right on that.
Okay, so then I guess the question for me is, with the evidence that you have, are you led to believe or disbelieve that Andy Reid will overcome these roadblocks that he's been, I mean, honestly, that he's been tripping over for the better part of the last two decades?
I'm very 50-50 on it. I would have said absolutely not before last year, mm-hmm. when he actually started doing things a little bit differently, mm-hmm. during two-minute drills. Now, he still drives us crazy sometimes with that, but it's not as bad as it used to be, oddly enough. Like, last year, I noticed some different stuff. Now, like the Rams game, he still tightens up at times.
Yeah.
But it's not every time like it used to be. I've looked at the way he's modified his offense, a few things like that. It's hard, though, to change that kind of thing. It's hard to stop doing the thing that's made you successful. And if he does change, it's going to be the Patrick Mahomes effect. I can't see anything else making a change other than Mahomes, because right now, Mahomes has a lot of juice in Kansas City, obviously, to borrow Therese Paylor's favorite term.
Right.
Mahomes has a lot of juice in Kansas City, obviously. The only dude in Kansas City with more juice is maybe Andy Reid. And it's kind of maybe at this point.
Yep.
Right? Like, which person, if they both went into Clark Hunt's office and said it's him or me, which person makes it out alive? I don't agree with it, but I think at this point, I think it's 50-50 that Clark would let Andy dictate the day. I think he thinks that much of Andy Reid.
Interesting.
Now, that's not who I would pick, because I think Patrick Mahomes is the best quarterback in the NFL by far, but that's neither here nor there,
if you took
right?
a popular vote among Kansas City, even without this game, not even after this game, like, I'm saying, like, after good Andy Reid game, Mahomes wins that, you know.
Mahomes wins that against anyone. Like,
yes, that's true.
I mean,
that's true.
It's not even close.
All right, Kansas City, we have to either get rid of Patrick Mahomes or the Kansas City Royals organization, the entire Sprint Center, and also Andy Reid. Folks, what are you thinking here? Oh yeah, goodbye door number two.
I think they keep Mahomes for sure. Yeah.
All so, college sports I'm gone.
And so I'm not saying I agree. I'm just saying that at this point, because he's still only in year three, I'm not sure Mahomes has quite the juice in that locker room. I think he does with the players. You can tell he's clearly the leader. Mm-hmm. But I don't think he's got the juice to say to Andy Reid, Andy, what the crap are we doing?
Yeah.
I don't know if he's quite got that juice yet, because, you know, Andy Reid has been his guy, right? The first year, Mahomes had to be deferential to Alex Smith, and Reed was helping bring him along. Last year was all about, wow, look at how Andy's brought him along. Look at everything Andy's done for him, all this. And now this year we're seeing, like, I mean, Mahomes is even better than last year, and the injury has kind of distracted people from that, but he's even better. And it's just crazy. And I think as this year goes along, there's a chance that the juice situation I'm talking about here slides in favor of Mahomes, to where he can finally look at him. And you know, Mahomes seems like a very team-oriented guy. I don't think he's ever a guy who would, like, disrespect a coach.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think if stuff like this happens too often, he's going to say, hey, coach, I need some options here.
Yeah.
Like this, we tried this and it didn't work. Now, I've heard Mahomes quoted that, you know, he loved the play call at the end of the Baltimore game, but I do think eventually the more juice he's got, the more he's going to be like, hey, you know, at least give me something to check out of, or at least let's not run a play where there's literally only one option. And it's the same with going for it on fourth down. I know Nate tweeted during the game that the one fourth down that they did go for, which, oh, by the way, they converted.
Yeah,
interestingly.
Shockingly. Yeah.
Which, you know, I love how now we're going to use anecdotal evidence to back up analytics. Well, listen, it's like, oh, I worked that one time.
See, no, that's what I'm saying. Here's what we have to do. It's got to be both, and we've got both. That's the good news. We know we're right here,
yep,
because it's all saying the same thing.
Yeah, the numbers, and when they actually went for it on fourth down, hey, they converted, and it was great.
Yeah.
Because, you know what, Andy Reid's really good at he's good at play calling. I'm not saying Andy Reid shouldn't be calling the plays. He's brilliant at it. He just needs to be careful not to try to control every facet of it,
yep,
in those do-or-die situations. Andy Reid makes great play calls on third and two, generally speaking. You just got to give more options to your quarterback. So anyway, what Nate had tweeted, if I'm recalling this correctly, and he'll correct me on times ours if I'm just way off base, but he had mentioned that to him it looked like maybe Mahomes like waved him off and was like, hey, come on, let's do this, and Reed listened to him.
I mean, I think there have been moments. I hadn't even seen that tweet. I don't know how that happened. I think there were a couple of moments earlier throughout the season that had elements of that where it looked like, at the very least, Reed's inclination was to come off the field. Mahomes was to stay on the field, and they stayed on the field. I would like for Mahomes to have, like, five of those overrides a game instead of maybe the one.
Right. And you want to be careful because I think you do – you don't want to end up in a situation where you're in anything resembling a power struggle.
Right.
Although I just don't see that happening with these two personalities. They're both too focused on winning.
Yeah. There can be a healthy give and take there. Like, again, a power struggle would be bad, but a healthy, open conversation would be good. Like that.
Right. And that goes to the analogy that I've used about Andy Reid repeatedly. One of our favorite articles that I've written for us to talk about has been the marriage analogy.
Yeah.
That Andy Reid has really helped curb some of Mahomes' worst instincts. He doesn't throw nearly as many potential picks as people thought he would.
Yep.
And that's in large part because of Andy Reid.
Fair.
However, if you want a perfect marriage, both sides got to change.
Yeah.
And Reed has handed over a lot of control to Mahomes. I think he has changed in terms of some of the play calls, the offensive design. But you got to change a little more. You know, you've got to come more his way. And I think if you want to see this perfect marriage, Reed needs to understand that Patrick Mahomes allows him to loosen the reins on those crucial third and fourth downs and say, okay, yeah, I'm going to play call the crap out of this, and odds are I'm smarter than that other coach, so it'll probably work. But just in case it doesn't, here's option B, here's option C, here's option D. Pat, I trust you. You pick the right option.
Yeah.
That's got to be where he gets, and until he does, these close games are always going to be the inexplicable, you know, throw to Demetrius Harris. That's what
right.
We saw with Blake Bell.
Yeah. I like, if there's a reason for optimism, it's within all of that, because Patrick Mahomes is the thing that Andy Reid hasn't been confronted with before this point in his career. So if you're going to be optimistic, I guess that's as good a place to do it as any. Go ahead.
It's worth noting just on one more thing with regards to Mahomes.
Mm-hmm.
I understand people are upset. They're frustrated. They feel like the season's over. You know, it's easy to feel that way after a loss. I understand.
Sure.
I would just say, if you have the ability to go back and rewatch the offense, I think you'll feel better, even though it's a frustrating experience at times. Yes, they had a fumble, all that. Because they left some points on the board that were kind of self-inflicted, and you can just see the brilliance of Mahomes. I think it'll make you feel better, because he played even better than you think. I can almost guarantee it.
Well, Seth, we just talked about this game for 30 full minutes and never talked about the defense or a handful of other things. So let's take a break here really quick. Seth Kaiser of The Athletic with us, and he will be back next segment here on Almost Entirely Sports.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
The Raiders are closing in on a one-year deal with Martavis Bryant. You may say, wait a second,
The same Martavis Bryant that they, yeah, I know him. The Raiders are one game in, and they're already bringing in a receiver that could be, could be suspended for a year. Also recently released.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
A little more Almost Entirely Sports left for you tonight here on 810. Still with Seth Kaiser on the other side of the phone, because there was so much in this football game. It means there's so much that we still haven't even covered, even after a whole segment talking about all the stuff in the special teams and all the stuff in the offense. We just talked for like 30 minutes about the stuff in this game, and we could legit just do this for all 3 hours, but I won't ask you to do that. But we did just talk for 30 minutes and haven't talked about the defense yet. And I think we did the right thing there. I think that we have divvied this up accurately, but I would like for you, however briefly or however much time you'd like for it, I'd like you to tell me if you feel differently about elements of the Chiefs defense after this game or not, and if so, where you would be reevaluating or where you might be going against the trends of reevaluation at this point.
Sure. And for what it's worth, I got nothing but time right now. So
let's go. We'll keep powering through.
Yeah. We'll power through. So with the defense, it's tough. You know, they just came off a really good performance against the Vikings. They came off against a great performance against the Broncos 2 weeks earlier. And then they played pretty well against the Packers, except when Rodgers went metahuman on them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then they just lay this egg against the Titans. It's just inexplicable. And the big thing is, for the course of the year, for the most part, other than a few big ones to like Rodgers, they've generally avoided giving up big plays.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, they give up, you know, a huge pass play down the field. Mm-hmm. They give up this giant run. And that's tough. And it's also worth noting, when you talk about the defense, you got to remember 7 of those points weren't on the defense. There's nothing they can do about that.
Yep.
This is such a cop-out answer, but I want to see what they do against the Chargers. If there's less confidence that I have in anything, I finally kind of jumped on board last week. You and I were talking about this, that we were kind of like, you know what? I like Steve Spagnuolo. Mm-hmm. I think he's got it. I think he's the guy. I have now taken a little bit of a step back on that, because the game plan against the Titans was so baffling that I just don't understand, like, taking Mike Pinnell off the field completely, not even having him play, in favor of Joey Ivey, who's more of a penetrator and less of a run defender. I don't know why you do that against the Titans. All of a sudden having Jordan Lucas on the field a ton. Not a ton, like 10 snaps, but he was on the field quite a bit early.
It was at the beginning, right.
I don't know why you do that.
Yeah.
None of it makes sense to me. That said, the Chiefs defense played really well in the first half, mm-hmm. by and large.
Mm-hmm.
The offense had kind of stalled out. They'd had the fumble recovery. The defense, and it's easy to forget this now, the defense played pretty well in the first half, and then the doors came off. The defense got a great stop at the end of the game,
mm-hmm.
and the offense couldn't run out the clock.
Right. At the first end. It was like, did you see the Hobbit trilogy whenever it came out? Imagine you did, right?
Yes.
I remember, because those three movies were all too long, I remember specifically the last one had like 7 endings, like all in a row. It was like, is this the end? Is this the end? Where are the credits? The Chiefs defense nailed like the first ending, and then their second ending, you know, Smog just turned back into Benedict Cumberbatch and the magic was gone.
Yes. It was not great, because yeah, like you said, they nailed the first ending. They got a sack. They got him to 4th and 17. Then they stopped him. They ended the game. Chris Jones kind of took over. Frank Clark kind of emerged. It was a cool thing. And then the offense couldn't quite seal the deal. And that's a big deal, because the entire narrative changes. Now, obviously, the defense that last drive was inexcusable.
Mm-hmm.
Inexcusable.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, I'm not saying don't be worried. Yes, be worried, by all means. But just keep in mind how thin a line that narrative hinges on.
Yep.
You know, there are just certain things. Had they gone just a little bit differently, we'd be talking about the defense very differently.
Yep.
And I want to see what Spagnuolo does this next week against the Chargers, because it was a bizarre game plan. Reggie Ragland didn't play that much,
mm-hmm.
which is weird to me. considering the opponent and considering all the steps the Chiefs have made the last few weeks that have often involved Reggie Ragland. I just don't know. It almost felt like Spagnuolo, who's been tinkering a ton with the defense, and we love it, it's almost like he tinkered one too many times.
Yeah.
And that's something you and I talked about as well in times ours with an extensive discussion about our dad. he just was tinkering with stuff.
Right.
So I haven't really changed my mind about anything. Yeah, Juan Thornhill had a really bad play in the open field.
Really
well, you know what? Juan Thornhill is not a box safety. He's been okay against the run this year. He's gotten to the right place, but he's missed some tackles. We already knew that about him, though. We knew he was at his best as a deep safety.
Can I sell you on this really quick? Before you get to the corners, because the safety, specifically to the safeties, if you could like snap your fingers and do one magical thing different in this game, if you switch Jordan Lucas and Juan Thornhill on their two worst plays, the Chiefs might have won this game by like 30 points.
I absolutely agree, because Lucas doesn't belong deep, but I think he at least slows down Derrick Henry and allows the Chiefs defense to swarm there.
That sucks. I just thought of that. That sucks. I hate that.
Yeah, that does suck, doesn't it? and then, yeah, if you put in Juan Thornhill on that deep completion, I think that probably – I don't think has nearly as good a chance of being complete.
Yep.
Ward got beat, but he clearly expected help deep, and he didn't get any.
Yep.
So – I want to see. We already knew that about him, and that is a depressing thing you said, man, about Lucas.
Isn't it? If you
man,
could snap your fingers
sad.
And have them switch uniforms just for those two plays, the defense has like one bad drive, and then that drive at the end never happens.
Yeah, it's amazing how thin a line these things hinge on. The linebackers, I mean, they. It's interesting, you know, you had some big run by Henry and then some kind of medium-sized runs, but they were doing a good job against him in the first half. The linebackers are who we thought they were. The corners, you know, Rashad Fenton, he tripped.
Yeah.
He tripped
on that
touchdown play. He slipped. The play before, he made a great play to break up a pass. And, I mean, he's not even supposed to be on the field, and Fenton has played, from what I can tell, fairly decently over the course of the last few weeks. And so the corners are who we thought they were. They're not guys you want to rely on to win the game. But, like, people are acting like all of a sudden, oh, man, it just must be a bunch of bums. Well, I got to tell you, the Minnesota offense sure did torch the really good Cowboys defense.
Yeah.
They've torched a bunch of other defenses over the last month and a half. So unless the secondary somehow, like, knew how to fake it for one game – They blanketed Rodgers' receivers most of the night. There's a reason why Rodgers had to go to his running backs or create miracle throws.
You're
it's because the corners are playing well.
Yes.
So the corners, they're okay. They've been good enough, but they're not great. You don't want to rely on them to win the game, but we already knew that. The pass rush, pretty good pass rush. We already knew that. Run defense, problematic. We already knew that. So I don't know if any of this has revealed anything new other than something we thought was more taken care of, the run defense, it just hasn't quite been taken care of, and this still isn't the defense that you want to rely on to get the final stop. This team does need the offense to close out games.
Mm-hmm.
The defense did get a stop late in the game, and if the offense bleeds out 5 minutes, then we're never talking about the rest of this. You know, I mean, here's a great what-if. With 3 minutes and 30 seconds left to go, Chiefs call a quick little out to Tyreek Hill. He drops the ball. And the result, it goes from 2nd and 8 to 3rd and 8. Had he caught that ball, not only one of two things happened. The Titans call a timeout, and so they use up one of their ones there, which means they wouldn't have the one later on, right?
Yep.
You're talking an extra 45 seconds off the clock.
Yeah.
That is a huge deal. And that's if Tyreek Hill just catches the ball and falls down.
Yep.
And so the offense didn't close. Now, is the defense more to blame? Absolutely, because the offense was better. But it still means we didn't learn anything new about the defense. We can't rely on it to win games. Well, yeah, I knew that already.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm totally good with all that. A couple specifics from some of the game plan choices that did really confuse me
is that Derek Nnadi and Damien Wilson played just a little bit more than half of the defensive snaps, which is less than either of them have averaged this season. Reggie Ragland played a third of the snaps, which is the least that he's seen the field since that whole, like, new defense came together back in Week 7. You mentioned Mike right. Pinnell being a healthy scratch. Jordan Lucas was a deep safety early in the game for some reason. Like, those decisions, those are all things that we're not going to hear from Steve Spagnuolo until Friday, I think, now, because of the Monday Night Football schedule, so we got to just sit in this for a week. But, like, Friday, that's the list of questions that I would have for Steve Spagnuolo is, hey, so why do these guys' roles change for a team that was actually probably going to try to run the ball more than just about anybody you've seen this year? But as far as execution right. went, like, yeah, there were two plays where safeties didn't execute the thing that a safety needs to do. And outside of that, I shrug emoji. That's that shrug emoji.
Yeah. Shrug emoji. And again, that last drive, inexcusable. You can't let Ryan Tannehill do that to you. I mean, they were in man coverage, and he started to run. When you're in man coverage, that's tough. Tannehill's a good athlete. He played receiver most of his college career. Mm-hmm. They should have stopped him short of the first down marker. A couple players didn't really get their nose in there.
Yep.
The whole thing's inexplicable. Although one I will give a pass to on that particular play, that run Tannehill made for a first down. You know, Frank Clark was behind him.
Yes, I feel like generally you're reading my tweets. This is so good.
If it's close, don't do that. You don't want to knock him over the line.
Yeah. Yep, on that specific play that you're talking about, yeah, Frank Clark was running towards the line, towards the first down marker. So the best he could have done would have right. been to, like, reach forward and, like, try to pull him back. That's tough. Rashad Fenton was being carried for 5 yards.
Yeah.
But Fenton was in the right spot. Like, Tyrann Mathieu should have probably put in a hit there, and he didn't. And I don't know why.
I think one thing that I believe is a problem here in the Crocker. A former cornerback, I can't remember his first name, I think Eric Crocker, he does a lot of cornerback analysis on Twitter. Former NFL cornerback, I can't remember his first name, which is just inexcusable. Good content, hope you find him.
You did say Eric.
He actually talked about this.
It's just Eric now.
Is it Eric?
I don't know.
So, it could be Eric. So anyway, he actually talked about this when after Ryan Fitzpatrick trucked the corner a few weeks back. And he talked about the fact that in the modern NFL, players are kind of in a tough spot because they need to be ready in case the quarterback slides. And because if he slides and you're already going towards trying to hit his leg, you might hit him in the helmet. And now suddenly it's a 15-yard penalty and an automatic first down.
Yeah.
And you stop the clock. However, if you don't, most quarterbacks like Fitzpatrick or, for example, Ryan Tannehill are bigger than corners. Or bigger than safeties. You know, they're not small guys, yeah. Most of these quarterbacks. And so you run the risk of getting run over because you don't want to get a penalty. And so the only thing I can think of with Tyrann Mathieu is that he saw Fenton already had him, and he was afraid that if he went in there and laid a big hit, they would say that Fenton was holding him up and that it was an illegal hit, a la like what Marcus Peters got a couple years ago in the Raiders game.
Mm-hmm. I just want the record to show that you said his name this week and not me. So that's all I can.
Or maybe it was Ron Parker that got the penalty.
Regardless, it is Eric Crocker who you were referring to. He's at Eric_Crocker on Twitter, and now I'm following him. So there we go. The more you know.
So I think that might have been what happened there.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Okay, he's being tackled. We can't get a penalty here. And they trusted Fenton to, I don't know, bring down a quarterback within 7 yards of tackling him. Easy for me to say. I'm not the one trying to tackle someone with 30 pounds on me.
Yeah. No, everything there I think is funny and also accurate. It's like, oh, hey, Rashad, you got to do that. Also, I wouldn't have. I think that's fair. Seth, it's always great talking to you. You're the best. You'll have more stuff up on The Athletic. The amount depends on how angry you still are. You know, at this point tomorrow, but you'll look ahead to the Chargers game at some point, I imagine, this week. And is there a bigger film review still coming as well?
Ahead.
Or are you have you hit your quota for this week as far as looking back?
I am going to do a film review as well. It's going to be a little bit abbreviated because of the amount I wrote
Fair.
Earlier in the week.
Yeah.
I am going to break. I'm going to chart Mahomes' snaps. I'm going to talk about drops because we didn't get a chance to talk about it, but drops played a huge role
sure
in Sunday's
did.
Game. If Hill and Watkins hang on to half of their drops, the game again is, you know, maybe a 14-21 point blowout.
Yeah.
Or at the very least the Chiefs win at the end.
Doesn't make me feel better.
And so I want to talk about drops. I want to talk about Wisniewski.
Because
he came in and I think he did pretty well, but I want to chart his snaps and see how he did. And I think I might have time to look at a few of the big plays given up by the defense, just to see if there's something more there that we're missing.
And if you want to go back and listen to yesterday's Times Ours, that's free for everyone. Just search for Times Ours wherever you get your podcasts. And then Friday episodes, there'll be one of those as well, just for subscribers of The Athletic. So come on board if you're not already. I think we still got an active deal right now at theathletic.com/timesours where you can get an outstanding deal for your subscription if that's something that you haven't done yet. You're out of excuses, dang it. You can go check that out. And you can also, of course, follow Seth on Twitter at RealMNChiefsFan. All right, Seth, I was going to say I feel better, but I don't. But thanks anyway.
I did the best I could. We'll see what happens Monday night.
I did the best I could. That's our new tagline. It's almost entirely sports on Sports Radio 810. I did the best I could. So we have a new slogan for the show, and we also have another show completely wrapped up. Thanks to Seth Kaiser of The Athletic, and thanks to you for hanging out with us. We'll talk to you again tomorrow from 8 to 10. We got shows on back-to-back nights. Stretch out and enjoy the space a little bit. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 8. Bye, Mom.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.